The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody. The voice is not top-notch today, and I apologize for that. And certainly your announcer this afternoon or this evening or whenever you're tuning into TKR to catch the latest edition of Need to Know is a little road weary. It's been quite a journey over the last couple of weekends. If you tuned in last week, I told you about my wedding experience with my goddaughter up in Indianapolis. A big wedding, a lot of celebration, and the miracle of a couple of people coming together and forming the union that makes sense. My great friend Mark's daughter, Kaylee, finally at 32. Decided that it was time, and she had a situation where she finally decided to accept the proposal of someone, and met the kid that she married, Jonathan, who is just a super individual. I know that their life together is going to be fantastic, and it's one of the building blocks in this life that we lead, that when you find the right person and you go ahead and take that plunge, that it's always taking a chance. But life's not about playing it safe. When you know something's right, you've got to go forward. And the wedding was really joyous from that standpoint. Both the families, because when people get married, it's not just the individuals. It's so, I'm so sorry. I've got a bit of a cold here, because I've been running and gunning for about 8 or 10 days. And anyway, I was talking about the miracle of marriage, and it was really something to behold, to see all that come together. And I wish John and Kaylee the most happiness possible as they move forward in their lives together. Then I came out to Las Vegas. We had a lot of events planned here this week. It was the Global Gaming Conference. I'm in the gaming business, of course, as the executive director of the Birmingham Racing Commission. We made the transition, not completely away from horse and greyhound racing, but we made the transition to the products that people prefer in this era of time, which is casino-style gaming machines. And we've had a really successful run over these first couple of years at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino now. And coming out here for this show every year, ironically, on the week of my birthday, which it runs about the same time every year, was here at the exact same time last year. It's been great to see colleagues that I've worked with or worked as far as different projects, and when you're in a certain industry, you interact with a lot of people working directly and indirectly with them, or seeing them at these kind of occasions. So it was great to catch up, walk around, look at all the people from around the world that are in the gaming machine business converge on this conference at the Venetian every year. The display floor is incredible. All of these machines are so sophisticated now. It's no wonder that gaming is bigger than ever and expanding like crazy. So that was the core mission of coming out. But there was also some other things. If you've listened to any of our shows, it's been pretty clear that I'm a big hockey guy. It started when I was in the eighth grade. The Atlanta Flames had come to Atlanta, and it was a really fun time, because The South had never seen hockey really, and the Flames were an expansion team in the National Hockey League. Everybody said, hockey in Atlanta, that's that's insane. That's not going to work there. The Flames played in the Omni right downtown. It became a sensation pretty much overnight, and I guess the best way to describe it is it was the place to go and be seen. And as my teenage years continued, the Flames just became even more popular because they were an expansion team that had a lot of success right away. Although that didn't equate to playoff success, the franchise was in Atlanta for only 11 years, leaving in 1982. But the sad thing about it is that the Flames got to the playoffs five or six times and never won a single series. That's not the reason that they moved to Calgary in Canada. The team was badly underfunded from the very beginning. The owner was more of a real estate kind of guy that really didn't have the means to be an owner. The league kind of propped him up because they were as interested in what he was going to build around the Omni, which was brand new at the time, and develop businesses, kind of the model that the Atlanta Braves finally took when they moved from downtown out to the suburbs in Marietta. They've built Truist Park there, and it is surrounded by all kinds of great restaurants, bars, night spots, hotels called the Battery, and it is what they envisioned all those years ago for that part of downtown Atlanta. It just never came to fruition. So when they had a chance to sell the franchise, and Canadian areas are so hungry for NHL teams, the Flames left for Calgary, and it was really a dark day for my friends and I and all the people that love the Atlanta Flames. But the bottom line is, got totally into hockey, but then I kind of boycotted for a lot of years because the Flames had all of our players that we not only liked to watch, but entering into young adulthood, we had a lot of really good friends that played for the Flames and hung out with those guys a lot. These were mostly young single guys from Canada who were just kind of running into the same circles that we were. A former player named Tim Ecclestone had opened a bar over on Roswell Road called Timothy John's became the hangout spot for all kinds of professional athletes and young guys like we were at that time. And it was just a fantastic time to be in one of the great booming cities in the country and grow up there, go through high school. I went to a couple of different colleges. I was away from Atlanta for a while to go to Memphis, where my dad lived, and he lured me there with a car. He wanted the cheaper tuition. So anyway, bottom line is I was gone a couple of times for brief periods, but I always went back home. But when the Flames left, it was kind of like the Don McLean song, "The Day the Music Died," because it was the center of all of our social activity, and we didn't miss a game. We were down there every all the time for years. The now extinct art, basically, of hustling tickets out front. We'd go down there with 10 or 12 bucks in our pocket and stand out there, and who's got extras, and Flames can't win till we get in. We had all the things, and people would walk over and go, "Well, I got an extra ticket." And I said, "Well, how much you want for it?" He's, "Well, it's a $25 ticket." And I said, but this is up in the second deck. I'll give you $8 for it." And they go, "Oh, how about 10? So, okay. So we wheeled and dealed. We would try to get a ticket to get in the game. That was first priority. But the second priority was if we got better tickets, if somebody was kind enough to sell us tickets with the little bit of money we had left. Then we would sell the first one we got because we had an upgrade. And a lot of nights we'd go down there, see an NHL game with maybe 10, 15 bucks in our pocket to start with. And by the end of the negotiations and wheeling and dealing, we'd walk out of there after the game with about 20 bucks in our pocket and head for after game activities. So that was the lifestyle that I led in my early years. We didn't miss any events. The Falcons were booming. The Braves, of course, were a big deal from day one. Those teams, of course, played downtown in Fulton County Stadium back in those days, which was not easy to get to and was traffic marred, and parking was just a giant pain in the rear end. But it was just a great place to grow up. And I don't regret now not living in Atlanta anymore, although most of my friends have stayed there. I kind of feel like I'm the only person that ever left Atlanta, because now there's like 6 million more people that live there than they did when I was growing up. And it's spread out so much that, you know, a lot of my friends live in the quote suburbs, but the suburbs are places that we used to consider day trips, up around Lake Lanier, northeast of town, almost all the way to Athens, where the University of Georgia is, to the south, all the way down to Peachtree City, which is, you know, a good ways down I-75. You know, probably 20 miles south of downtown Atlanta. These are all places that, you know, we may have showed up at a time or two, but, you know, to think that people commute from these places. I used to have a running joke with my good friend Jim Hevern, who lived up at Chateau Alon, which is a beautiful development up in Winder, Georgia. And, you know, Jim was with traffic on I-85 coming into Atlanta. We used to say, okay, we'll meet at the Braves game at Turner Field. This one, I was living in Birmingham the first time. And he says, what time can you get there? And I said, well, one thing's for sure. I might live in Birmingham, but I think I can get there sooner than you in the suburbs of Atlanta, because the traffic is such a nightmare. And he was a solid, even if there was no traffic, he was a solid hour and 15 hour, 20 minutes away. And if I jumped in my car in Birmingham, right on I-20, you could be at Turner Field in just under 2 hours. So that became the running joke that I could get there before he did. So I miss Atlanta. I love going over there and hanging out with all of my lifelong friends. And I'm proud to say that my four best friends growing up, Jim Hevern, Joe Lippel, Mark Random, Steve Hardy, are still my four best friends to this day. And when we get together, it's nothing but reminiscing and laughs. And it's been such a unique opportunity these last couple of weeks. In Indianapolis, of course, it was Mark's daughter that was getting married. Jim Hevern, again, the aforementioned first guy I ever went to a hockey game. My mom took me and Jim for my birthday in eighth grade, and we were hooked immediately. Jim and I have a dispute about who they played that night. I think it was the Detroit Red Wings. He remembers the Minnesota North Stars, but whoever it was awesome. And Jim and I became huge hockey guys and really spawned our entire high school and outlying community that of people that we played ball with and were involved with in other activities. It swelled in the next 3 or 4 years to where there was basically a contingent of all of our group and all of our friends that sometimes were 35, 40, even maybe close to 50 people. And every period as the time ended, we would convene at Portal 44, which is just a number where you go down to get your seats. It was kind of in the corner of the goal the Flames shut out twice. We didn't necessarily sit there because, again, we hustled up tickets, but that's where we met between periods to, you know, just socialize and talk about the game. And it was a tradition that went on the life of the Flames franchise. So great times, great memories. And I bring all that to the fore, not because that was specifically the story I wanted to tell you, but just how deeply rooted we are in hockey. Because I, after the Flames left, I followed them the next year or two in Calgary because it was a lot of our players. But as those guys started to retire or be traded or go elsewhere, I really lost interest in hockey for a long time. And then my sons both lived here in Las Vegas. Case, of course, getting out of the University of Kansas, took an internship here. He'd always traveled to the city with me many times throughout my professional career, where I've had to go to Las Vegas for about the last 30 years. And it got to the point where he always wanted to go, and I'd bring him. And we would go up and down the strip. One trip, he was obsessed. Back in the day, they all had these nice plastic cups that were for your coinage, because that's when you still put coins in the machines. Of course, we're long past that era now. You get a voucher basically, and it tabulates your winnings or deducts your losings from your balance. So, but in those days, each individual casino, all themed, all brand new, because Vegas went through its boom period during that era of his childhood, we would go casino to casino and go in and get a souvenir cup. And he still has that collection of all of those cups and probably walked miles on those trips. But he fell in love with the city. When he got out of college, he had an opportunity to come intern with the World Series of Poker, although he knew nothing about the game, but it was a great media opportunity. He made a lot of contacts. Next thing you know, he was hired by the Las Vegas Sun. This was 11 years ago, and he's still there and ascended at the age of 34 to the sports editor of the organization, Greenspun Media, who not only puts out the Las Vegas Sun newspaper, but also a number of other publications, and Case writes for all of those. He's also become one of the premier authorities on sports betting. That became a very great obsession of his, and he devotes a ton of time to it. He covered the UFC, the fighting, the Ultimate Fighting Championship organization, who was just starting to grow and boom during that era. And ringside at every big fight, UFC now, of course, is just wildly popular throughout the world. And Case has been one of the premier voices and writers. If you watch a pay-per-view of a UFC fight, you're almost guaranteed to see Case making a comment. They'll say, "We asked Las Vegas Sun Case Kiefer his assessment of this matchup." And Cases on these worldwide broadcasts of UFC fights, giving his opinion or talking about doing a personality profile about one of the combatants. So he's really enjoyed a great history here. He married his sweetheart from college all the way back to high school, Tracy. Tracy is a wildly successful executive here as well. She's in the event business, and her company puts on so many of the big shows and conventions and different things. So they are the power couple. 4 years ago, they had their first child, King Kiefer. And boy, he fits the title. He is a handful. And coming to Las Vegas for me is so much fun, so gratifying to be able to get King time. And we were treated with the announcement at dinner the first night here last Monday. We sat down and they said, "Well, we went back to the doctor today. Tracy's officially expecting, and we already know what it is." So we had the big reveal. We will have the first girl born in the Kiefer family since 1961, when that second grandchild for me arrives in April. And it's just such a source of excitement. I can't tell you, adding another, because you always hear it. And I know a lot of younger people are listening to this that probably can't understand or appreciate it, but there's just something about seeing another generation of the one that you kind of started, another generation start. And King has just been the biggest joy in my life in the last couple of years. And now he's going to have a little sister and a granddaughter for me. I just can't even imagine how wonderful that's going to be. So we'll, we will, wait till April and see how that goes. The ironic thing is my son Case was born in August, 4.5 years later. His brother Clayt, who I'm extremely close to as well. Clayt is responsible for me being able to push a couple buttons and tune in no matter where I am in the world for my TKR shows. And I did both of my shows on Jocks 94.5 in Birmingham over the weekend. And Clayt makes it all possible. He's a technical genius and just the best kid you could ever have. But he was born in April, 4.5 years later. King Kiefer, born in August of 2000, of 2020. And now the next one is coming in April of 2025, 4.5 years, August and April, exactly the dates and months. The difference in age spans of our children to Case and Tracy. So a lot of exciting things there. But I didn't mean to make this a personal diatribe, but just thought I'd update you on what I've been doing and how blessed I am. The hockey rest of the story was 6 years ago. Actually, this is the eighth year. I can't believe it's been that long. The Vegas Golden Knights became the first professional sports franchise here in Las Vegas. And my son Case was covering the team. My youngest son Clayt had just been hired by the same newspaper to come out here and work for them a lot of supporting roles as a, again, just a genius in terms of technology. And now he is the director of digital media for the company, although he lives back in Birmingham and does that remotely. But they were both in attendance of the first ever Vegas Golden Knights game here in Las Vegas. The first professional sports team to take the court, the ice. And of course it was a packed house and the excitement was over the top. But just 5 days before that, the horrific Las Vegas shooting of a country music festival from the window at Mandalay Bay by the insane jackass who did that. And I don't mention names of killers on my broadcast, but 40 some odd people were shot and killed. There were so many stories of heroism with first responders, but also just regular people that were at the festival did extraordinary things under the face of just sheer horror and terror. And it was just 5 days later that the Golden Knights played their first game. There was they scrapped all of the planned activities before the game and made it a solid hour and a half tribute to so many people. First, the memory of those that were lost, but second, to emphasize the lives that were saved by people just stepping beyond the means of any kind of a sensible behavior and putting themselves in danger to save others, getting people out of harm's way, out of firing range, getting wounded people to hospitals as fast as possible. A lot of people were taking people themselves and getting them into their cars and getting them out of there because, of course, traditional services were so overwhelmed and there was still a danger there. The bottom line is that ceremony really, and both my sons are not real touchy feely. They're pretty grounded guys, but it was very emotional for everybody that was there. Those guys still talk about it. And then when the game started under a tremendous amount of emotion, the Golden Knights took the ice and scored four times in the first 8 minutes, which in hockey, that is an explosion of goals. And the city has been just hockey nuts since then. This city, who didn't even have an ice rink at the time, or just had one, also ironically operated by a friend of mine named Kirk Brooks, was the only ice rink in town and had a tiny little youth hockey program. Now there are five facilities in Las Vegas just 8 years later, including a massive structure out in Summerlin, a suburb where the Golden Knights practice and have their kind of headquarters and a base of operations, but there's four other rinks in that complex, and the youth hockey programs in Las Vegas, the last place you would think would be hockey nuts, but the youth hockey programs are just overflowing with kids playing. It is the biggest deal here that you could possibly imagine. So the opening game for the 2024 season was last Wednesday night. I talked about Jim from Atlanta, who I grew up with. Jim just happened to be in Las Vegas this past week for a convention that he was attending, not the gaming convention, but another one. And he was here. There was a lot of other people, including my friend Mark, who just his daughter Kaylee just got married. His older daughter Ashlyn was here for another convention, and so we had quite a contingent of people in town. And I've got tons of family, a lot of friends. So next thing I know, we just decided that we were all going to go to the first game of the year, and I went a little crazy because I've always wanted to do it. We had a luxury box at that game right at center ice. It was amazing. All the food, all the drinks you could have, all laid out there. It was like living in the highest circles of society. I can't believe people own these boxes and live this lifestyle every day. But for one day, me and all my family and friends lived that dream last Wednesday night as the Golden Knights, again, did not disappoint us. 8 goals in that game. They won 8-4 over the Colorado Avalanche. And what a night it was. And it was spectacular and wonderful. And everybody was just amazed at that experience. And were saying that this is something they would never forget. And Copio said, this is the best time I've ever had at a sporting event. It was great. And the best thing, my 4-year-old grandson King was absolutely mesmerized. We took him to a game last year, sat right down on the glass. He loved it, but he even liked the vantage point and being able to be freely move around. He could go up and down the steps and run around up in the reception area where all the food and drinks were. But in the first period, when the Golden Knights scored 3 times, King was riveted. I mean, he was totally locked on. And a 4-year-old being really into a game is a cool thing to watch, because, again, this is a kid that's at the age where he doesn't sit still very often. But he absolutely loved it. And seeing him down there chanting "Go Knights, go!" and jumping to his feet when the Golden Knights would score, one of the most satisfying moments of my life. And you might think that that's kind of absurd, but it's really an experience that you have to live to see another generation of what you began and what your parents began. Just coming into their own and seeing the excitement and how much he was excited to be there. He told he told his teacher during the day, he goes to like a preschool, and that they still make them take a nap in the middle of the afternoon. And she said, "King, you haven't slept. You can't go to sleep." And he said, "No, I'm going to see hockey tonight. I'm too excited to sleep. I'm dreaming about hockey." And to hear those words and see his reaction, folks, it's what life's all about. And I don't have a lot of other things here. When you're in Las Vegas and you're busy running rampant, you don't really have a lot of time to be checking in on all the insanity that's happening around the world. I know I usually give you my perspective on things that are happening in our world and in our country, but a respite from that this week, because what I wanted for you to know, maybe you didn't need to know, but what I wanted you to know is stop, smell the roses, do things a little bit out of your comfort zone, but do things for others and do things particularly for those you love and create special moments. That's what, at this stage of life, it's all about, creating as many extraordinary moments as you possibly can, not just for yourself, because you'll get plenty of reverberation of the appreciation and the joy of others when you do something special for them. And that's what it's all about. Anything superficial is just that. It's doing things for those you love and people that you want want to give the ultimate experiences to, if you're in position to do that, make it happen, no matter how ridiculous it seems from a price tag standpoint or practicality. Sometimes those things need to go out the window, and you need to emphasize the moments that you have, and the moments that you have are so valuable. And if you make them extraordinary, that value increases. But you also need to be mindful of the fact that sometimes the most extraordinary moments are not the ones that are pre-planned. So do not miss the boat, and really relish and appreciate those moments as well. That's the message this week. That's what I thought you need to know. And if you didn't need to know, you now you know anyway. I'll be back on the regular track next week. I'll be leaving this paradise today and heading back to Birmingham, but I'm looking forward to getting back to home base and some normalcy. Appreciate Tony Curry and the TKR Network for allowing me this time every week to express my thoughts. I didn't know what I was going to talk about today, so I totally winged it, but that's the need to know for this week. We'll be back to business as usual next week as we close in on an election. To be very frank, I'm glad I've kind of escaped all of that rhetoric and nonsense, because I find it heartbreaking to see our country in such divide and in such confusion over the right course to take, which I feel like I've got a very good roadmap of exactly which way we should go. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week. We will greet you again from Birmingham next Monday, right here on TKR. I'm Kip Kiefer. That's what you need to know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.